This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Now, here's the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, food psychology coach and best-selling author, Janelle McCauley.
Hi, and welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm Janelle McCauley, and I'm so glad you decided to spend the next hour with me. My promise to you is that if you take action on the information we provide each week, you will transform your health and your life. Before I introduce today's guest, I want to invite you to go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com and get our free ebook, Do You Wish Your Kids Ate Better? It's packed with quick and easy ideas to make any mealtime fun and healthy. We've got another great show for you today, and I'm really excited about this conversation. It's one I've got a lot of questions on. So grab your pen and paper and your favorite beverage, and let's get started. My guest today is Bonnie Royal. Bonnie is also known as the Slimming Strategist, and is a registered dietitian nutritionist and an accredited hormone cure coach with over 30 years of experience helping women in midlife reach their healthy weight, look great, and be happier. She is also owner of B3 Nutrition, providing her signature weight management program, The Smarter Way to Slim Down, a comprehensive program created exclusively for women in midlife. Whether it's food choices, hormonal imbalances, stress-induced eating, lack of exercise, or just life, Bonnie is dedicated to helping women discover that weight gain in midlife is not inevitable. On today's show, I'm going to be talking with Bonnie about how you can outsmart your midlife weight gain. Welcome, Bonnie. I'm excited to have you.
Thank you, Janelle. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I want to start today's conversation by just asking you to talk a little bit about your background and what it means to be a registered dietitian nutritionist, that's a mouthful, and a hormone cure coach.
Well, on the first look, it may seem that the two have little in common, but when you start to peek under the covers, you can see how the two dovetail nicely. So let's first look at what it means to be a registered dietitian nutritionist. First and foremost, I am a nutritionist and a registered dietitian. It's been my passion since I was 13. A registered dietitian holds a minimum of a BS degree in nutrition, attends an internship to put into practice what they've learned in school, and then sits for the credentialing board exam to use the RDN initials. Now, I've been practicing, as you mentioned, for over 30 years, and I've had clients or patients with issues such as hypothyroidism, which is a low thyroid level, and weight gain. I could see that these women were really struggling to lose weight. They were doing all the right things, but yet had little or no results. So this piqued my interest in hormones and weight control. Then I read the book, The Hormone Cure. It's a New York Times bestseller by Dr. Sarah Gottfried, which is a Harvard-trained OBGYN, and I immediately knew I had to join her program to become an accredited hormone cure coach. The main reason I was attracted to the program is that it's based on rebalancing hormones, first through nutrition, second botanicals, third lifestyle interventions, and lastly, the use of hormone replacements. So by expanding my working knowledge of hormones and the role they play in weight gain and loss, I can drill down with my clients the real reason they are struggling to lose weight.
That's really interesting. I actually have that book, The Hormone Cure, on my counter. It's a book I'm actually reading right now.
Yeah, well, it's the Bible.
That's good. It's good to know I picked up the right book.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Dr. Godfrey's writing a second book that will be published in March of this coming year.
Amazing. It's got great information in it. And I'm excited to have this conversation today because I think a lot of people, they get to midlife and they really do think that there's nothing I can do. I'm going to put on weight. It doesn't matter what I do, so why try? Which, of course, then makes it even worse when they do it. And I'm excited to really hear from you what we can do and what's important. I know your Smarter Way to Slim Down program was created for women in midlife. Can its principles be applied to weight management in other stages too, or is there something that happens really specifically in midlife?
Well, the principles for my program are based on what I call six pillars to healthy weight loss, which includes pillars that are specific to women in midlife, but it also includes pillars that are helpful for anyone desiring weight loss. The program is based on creating a sustainable eating plan. By that I mean it's one that a person can adopt for years to come, not just something that you eat for a week or a month and then stop. Since I work exclusively with women in midlife, the program was created to help women overcome the challenges that typically face women during this time of life.
So how would someone know that they'd be right for this program or to come talk to you?
Typically, my clients are women that have been trying to lose weight, struggling, and the scale's not moving. So they're very frustrated because they feel they've been eating all the right foods, maybe even exercising, and they don't know what's happening to them. Second, it can be women that very often I have women that it seems like they turn 50 and they turn around, and all of a sudden they have 10 pounds around their waist that they didn't have. And they don't know where it came from. They look and they say, gee, I haven't been eating anything extra. I don't know what's happening to me. Or a lot of women, the number one complaint I'll hear along with weight gain is lack of energy. They want to get more energy back, and they know it must, there's a connection with what they're eating. So I would say that's the type of clients that I deal with. Most of my clients are looking to lose anywhere from 10 to 30 pounds. I say that because when we get past that 30-pound mark, then I would need to really start working in tandem with a healthcare provider to ensure that I have additional information regarding perhaps lab values, more of an in-depth medical history to ensure that I'm working with that provider hand-in-hand in a partnership to make sure we're both providing the guidelines for this patient or client to follow. Because when you get past 30 pounds of weight, that would be considered now you're obese. And so you're going to start to see a lot more metabolic issues occurring. And so I prefer to actually have that doctor or a naturopath, whoever I'd be working with, have that kind of conversation with them to be able to make sure I bring to the table the best for the client.
And I love that you say you help create a sustainable eating plan, because I tell people when they talk about dieting, and I don't like that word, but when they talk about wanting to go on a diet or what diet should they go on to lose weight, I tell them that almost any diet will work in the short term. The challenge is most of the ones that are out there today, I believe, aren't sustainable for the long term. They don't change your lifestyle habits or your patterns. They tell you to eat very specific things right now, today, and as long as you're following those guidelines, you're going to lose weight, or most people lose weight. But once you stop doing that, you're going to go back exactly where you were, or even worse off than you were when you started.
Janelle, I agree with you completely. It's what we call the diet mentality. It's people think of the word diet as something you go on and off, and that's why there's all that negativity attached to it. Oh, I'm on a diet. Usually that also equals deprivation. And because our society, even women in midlife, have all become so accustomed to instant gratification, quick results, we're looking for that even when it comes to weight loss. We're impatient. I have clients that will call and say to me, I need to lose 30 pounds in 30 days basically, and I'll say to them that I'm not the person for you. Because what I'm bringing to the table is especially the biggest component is lifestyle, is also mindset, attitudes, looking at their sleep, looking at, again, of course, at the hormones, looking at their fitness level, and obviously the basic is the food they eat. So it is really my preferred client, and the person who's going to get the best enjoyment working with me, is going to be someone who's really looking at the big picture and also looking at long-term. Is aware that I always start by asking people, what is your vision of health? What is it you see yourself a year from now? What would you like to say about yourself? And then I find out their why. Why do you want to lose weight? And for many of these women, it has to do with wanting to be there for their grandchildren, to be able to do a lot of, trips and vacations with their spouse or companion. So we keep that flame there so that they know it's going to be a journey. Weight loss is a journey. It's not a sprint. It's more of a marathon. It's slow, methodic. And if we can get, when we can get somebody to kind of embrace that, it actually makes it so much easier because then they're not hard on themselves because there's so much shaming that goes on with weight loss. The shame of not being able to lose weight, thinking that it's something they're doing, when often, again, a person can be doing a lot of the right things, but they've got, their hormones are kind of what I like to call hijacked, and that's working against them.
Oh, I love all the things you just said, and it's such a perfect complement to what we do with our Eat Great, Live Well program, because we get people who know they want to do something, but they don't know what to do. They don't even know where to get started. And mm-hmm. the first thing we work with them to do is identify their big why and really understand why they want to get healthy. And a good reason is not because they're going to their class reunion in a month or two and they want to get, you know, look the same way they did mm-hmm. in high school, or, you know, they want to fit into a dress. It's really the big picture. Why do you want to do that? I know for me, and it's funny you said grandkids, because for me, that's why I want to stay healthy, because I want to be able to be here for them. I want to be part of their life. I want to be able to get down on the floor and, you know, cuddle up and do all those things. If I don't take care of myself, I'm not going to be able to do that.
Janelle, you actually verbatim have said the words. I've had clients say that sentence, I want to be able to get down on the floor and play with my grandkids. Because when you get overweight, it's hard to get up if you've got an extra 20 pounds you're carrying on your frame. You don't have the energy level to go to the park with them, to be able to do the things that, you know, that you dream about once you have grandchildren. So that is definitely, for a lot of women, that is a guiding factor to keep them going. For some other women, it's the fact that they already are experiencing what I like to call midlife maladies. They stuck their toes in the water for prediabetes. They've been told by their doctor, I think I'm going to put you on medicine for hypertension. They don't want to go down that route. They'll say, I don't want to take medicine. I don't want to end up like my mother. So this is why, for some people, it's actually already a health issue that's emerging that really is their big why. And sometimes someone would say, well, that must be a better motivator because they must, you know, really then do things. And I have to let people know that fear is not the best motivator. So even if someone does come to me and states that's one of the reasons, I dig even deeper. Because believe it or not, we can, with my coach, my skills as a wellness coach, I can dig deeper and find out the true why of why somebody really is concerned about their health. And sometimes it can boil down to something as simple as, I just don't want to die when my mother did at the age of 65. Mm-hmm. And they just have never been able to really even verbalize it out loud. And when they say it, it's very powerful. And then it's like, I'll say, gotcha, now we've got it. We hold it up, and that's going to be what's going to keep you going through the next 6 months, a year of this process.
Absolutely. And when they get to their big why, you can just see their whole I was talking to someone the other day about her big why, and it's when she really got to it, because she said she really didn't know what it was, but when she got to it, her body language changed. Her face mm-hmm. lit up. You could hear it in her voice. So what's your big why? Why are you motivated to help people live healthier and to do what you're doing?
Well, actually, for me, it's interesting. I had a client very recently say to me, Bonnie, you've dedicated your life to health and wellness. And I sat back and I realized, wow, she's spot on. Because I started my love affair with everything to do with nutrition and health when I was 13 years of age. I read the book Diet for a Small Planet by Frances L'Amour, and I just thought to myself, wow, I can see that I want to help people through food. So I actually went home that day and told my mother I was going to be a dietitian, and I was only 13 and never veered. As an adult, I've worked as an RD in the ICUs, intensive care units, of many hospitals, and I've seen up close the effects of neglecting nutrition, exercise, and healthy habits. Conversely, I've seen the power of nutrition. Food is truly medicine. I've worked with patients to get their cholesterol level down. I've worked with type 2 diabetics to change their diet so they can stop taking their medications. I've helped patients get enough strength to get them off their ventilator machines through the nutrients we pass through a feeding tube. Now, working with clients over the past 10 years regarding weight management, I've seen what I call the trickle-down effect. Some women, when they lose weight, now they start to take action on other areas of their life. Like going back to school, being able to set boundaries with others, even deciding to leave their husband. I've had someone do that or change their job. So the other side of my why is it causes me despair to see women struggling with weight loss. Weight management is a complex issue, but it's not rocket science. It's really a mix of art and science, and that's my sweet spot.
I love that. And I want to continue this conversation. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I really want to talk a little bit more about some of the challenges facing women in midlife and some of the things that they can do. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
At LifeScape, we believe in a proactive approach to your health or whole health, which is why we created the LifeScape Online Health Store. Browse our store for the best physician-recommended nutrition, skincare, and health-related products to fit any lifestyle and budget. Have your order shipped directly to your home or pick it up at our Scottsdale office. Our goal is to provide the most trusted products to enhance your health and beauty regimen. Visit LifeScapePremier.com/store today. LifeScape, whole health for a whole life.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Bonnie Royal, registered dietitian, and we're talking about women in midlife and how they can really take control of their health. And before the break, we were talking about your big why, and I love it when our focuses and our interests are so aligned, which they are, Bonnie. It just it's interesting to have that conversation, and I love your passion for why you do. It's very unusual that someone knows at such a young age that that's what they want to do, and that passion stays with them for life. So that's really neat.
It's made my life a lot easier, too.
I can imagine. I'm going to ask you, can you share some of the challenges facing women in midlife that are different from women that are younger or maybe even, you know, older, but probably more so than when they're younger? So what changes and mm-hmm. what are some of the challenges mm-hmm. that they face that are so different?
Yeah. Well, women in midlife, and I define midlife loosely as between the ages of 40 to 60, do have challenges that younger and even their older counterparts don't experience. One of the most irksome challenges that women face is that unwanted weight gain. And in fact, according to the latest statistics, they've showed that women between the ages of 40 and 59, 68% of them become overweight or obese during that time frame of their life. So it really is the number one thing that comes to, because it's so visible. Women can see it, they can feel it. Another challenge in women in midlife face is they enter what we call the perimenopause stage, which is the stage just prior to menopause, is that they're likely to experience hot flashes or night sweats. These are called vasomotor symptoms, and these symptoms interfere with a woman's quality of life, especially her sleep. Because she might be having night sweats and waking up throughout the night. Now, we know from research that started back in 2005 and has been confirmed over the past decades through numerous studies that lack of restorative sleep interferes with our body's ability to have the hormones complete what I call their dance at night. While we sleep, there are various hormones at work that help to regulate our blood sugar, our feelings of hunger, and fullness. When our hormones can't complete that dance, if they can't complete it, we most likely are going to wake up craving higher sugar foods, and we may even feel hungry all day long. We just can't satiate ourselves. In fact, one study showed that just 3 nights where the person had only 4 hours of sleep, their blood sugar levels started to resemble those of individuals with type 2 diabetes. So by this I mean they were showing signs of their body becoming resistant to the hormone insulin to be able to take that blood sugar and put it, get it out of the bloodstream and into the person's cells where it belongs. That's why I like to say that sleep is not negotiable. So that is one of the things that, unfortunately, as we age, we have a tendency to burn that candle at both ends, stay up later, not realizing the trickle-down effect from that. It's also during midlife that women are most likely to develop fibroid conditions like Hashimoto's or Graves' disease. Plus, there's been estimates that over 50% of women are walking around with what's called subclinical thyroid levels. That means that your lab values show you are in the normal range, but your body knows that the level isn't right for it, so your thyroid isn't working as efficiently as it could. A whole new area that we've been seeing in the last 5 years for women in midlife is having gastrointestinal changes. We never saw so much of this as we do now. One of the reasons is there are fluctuations in ovarian hormones that contribute to belly bloating, that horrid belly bloating, and sluggish intestines. But we're also, there's a whole new field of science, which is quite fascinating, that I'm sure in a few years is going to explode, that has to do with our gut microbiota and the changes with age. And when I say gut microbiota, I'm talking about those lovely bacteria that live in our gut. There is good bacteria, bad bacteria, and unfortunately, as we age, they decline in number, and of course, they also decline in the variety. So we lose some of the protective microbiomes or the bacteria that we need. And this is when we also, in midlife, start to see lactose intolerance rearing its head. Another area that I see within my practice is for women in midlife is that they appear to have more challenges with stress. And I think this is likely because by the time of midlife, women often hit the top of their career. So they're working many hours. They've worked hard. They've arrived, and they're continuing to work hard. They may still have children at home, and they may be entering their tween or teenage years. Plus, they have aging parents to care for. So women at this time of life often find themselves sandwiched between these responsibilities, which leaves little time for self-care rituals like regular exercise, activities that help to manage stress, and taking time to plan, shop, and prepare healthier meals.
Wow, I'm you're going down your list, and I'm saying, okay, me. And I'm sure there are a lot of women that are saying the same thing. Because, you know, I have absolutely no trouble falling asleep at night, but about 3:30, I am wide awake. I probably go to sleep too early, but I find I get 6-7 hours sleep, and I know I should probably be sleeping a little bit longer, but my head starts going, and then I just, you know, once I'm awake, I'm awake.
And that's, Janelle, it's really common for women in this stage of life to actually have what we call early morning awakenings. And that is actually pretty much hormonally driven because of what's happening. If we had more time, I could explain. But part of it has to do with this would be if I had a client that was having this on a regular basis to the point where it was interfering with her quality of life. By that, I mean she found she was having to depend on caffeine, chocolate, everything to stimulate her during the day. She always felt like she was just dragging herself. She never felt restorative sleep. I would definitely suggest that we look at her hormones because there's a good chance that that could be the reason why. The other reason, though, can be is that you just have an overactive brain and you just are excited about what you're doing. You have a passion for what you do. You're exploding with ideas. So, but again, that's not something we want to happen as waking up because you are disturbing your sleep pattern. So we would look at then, okay, that's great. Your hormones, maybe we've done your hormones. They're all normal. Then it looks like we need to find some stress reduction techniques for you. Maybe before you go to sleep, we figure out a way for you to relieve your mind of all the thoughts, the anxieties, you know, everything that you can, kind of a dump what I call at nighttime in a journal or write things down so that when you go to sleep, you've trained your brain to know that it's time to sleep and not to be thinking.
Interesting. And I love that the term you used, you know, the dance at night, you know, that sleep is not negotiable because it really does affect your body and how it regenerates, rejuvenates, and takes care of itself. And I can see how it all fits together. And I love the way you've really simplified and made the conversation and the explanation so understandable because most people make it so complicated. And I know it's complicated to take care of it. I get that part. But people need to understand it. So that's why I love these conversations.
I find that women really want to know more of the why now. They're not, they don't want to have just someone tell them what to do. Most of my clients enjoy understanding some of the background of why I'm suggesting something to them. And I think that makes sense. We're adult learners, and once we learn something, we understand why someone's asking us to do something and what the benefits are to us. At least it gives a little bit, it lets that door open a little bit more for us to consider actually taking action in that direction.
Right, and I find if I understand why I'm doing something, then it makes sense. And when I start to go back and do it the other way, I remember the reasons why I'm doing it, and it makes such a difference, and it also helps me keep focused on what I need to be doing, not what I want to be doing. Because I think oftentimes it's just easier to... I was talking to someone yesterday, and so often... I think it's a tendency a lot of us do, is we do the things that are easy to do and the things that we're very comfortable doing, not the things that are outside that comfort zone. And knowing why helps me stay focused on what I should be doing to make a difference.
And part of it is that we actually, it's almost like our brain is like a super highway, and so the road's already paved. So that's why we take the path of least resistance, because we've got those synapses, everything's connected. So we know, this is what I eat for breakfast. It's a no-brainer. It might just be someone grabs a banana and they runs out the door. They don't realize that, then they wonder why an hour later they're starving, and then they run in, you know, to a fast food place, because it's time to change that highway, pave a new highway. And it takes a bit of time. It takes so many times to do it, but then it does become your new pattern, your new way of being.
Yeah, I really like that. I mean, it really makes me think differently about what I'm doing and how I do it. By the time someone's in midlife, is it really too late, do you think, for them to start getting healthy or making these changes?
I think it's never too late to start to create healthier habits, as there are always benefits to that change. I like to call it a downstream effect, because one healthy habit, like, say, taking a 10-minute walk in the morning, tends to lead to becoming more aware of what the person is going to be eating maybe before they go for that walk or after. So, yes, the ideal is to start this much earlier in life, actually at a time a child enters the toddler stage. That's when it's time to create a relationship with food based on real food products versus processed. And then if we look at back to our age, if we look at the life expectancy for women, it's now reported to be age 85. That means if a woman at 50 years of age starts to eat healthier, participate in daily exercise, maintain a healthy weight, and surrounds herself with the activities, things, people that give her pleasure, she's looking at a true golden parachute for her twilight years. There's so many years ahead of us. But in midlife, this to me is the time, the most important time, to embrace these self-care needs and to take action on them, because it is going to allow you to enter those senior years with the vigor, with the energy, to be able to do the things you dream of doing.
And I think that's an interesting thing for people to remember, because we often, I think, tell ourselves, whether it's true or not, we tell ourselves, there's, you know, I'm too, and I did it for a few years. I'm too old to change. I'm too old to do something different. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of my grandmother, who at 90 needed cataract surgery, and everyone kept saying, she's too old. She doesn't have much time left. She lived to be almost 103, and those last few years she really couldn't see, and had, you know, and it's always 20/20 hindsight. Right. It's always easy to say, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. But I think it's important to remember that there's still plenty of time, so don't say it's too late. I think it's a story we tell ourselves.
Yes, it's interesting you should say that expression, because I do approach that topic with my clients, that we tell ourselves a lot of stories. I mean, that's how we make sense of our life. Psychologically, that's how we cope with life. We tell ourselves stories. And I often will use the phrase, it's time to rewrite your story. And then, well, actually, sometimes we actually will go through the person's story, because what we're talking about now are beliefs. And a lot of these beliefs are self-limiting beliefs. They're beliefs that maybe they're not even our beliefs. They're what you call the conscious collective. There are things we've heard from our own family. You know, maybe we heard our own mother or grandmother say, oh, life is over when you hit 65. you know, or we've read something, or someone at work we've seen, whatever, something has, we've absorbed a lot of other people's beliefs and take them as our own. And often this is actually, midlife is the time where a lot of this comes to the surface, because we do start to kind of take a stand. There's a thought process that once a lot of our reproductive hormones are starting to shut down, some of the other hormones that kind of come to center stage are the ones that really allow women to excel. And that's why we have women that are 80 that are painting and producing plays at the height of their career, because it is possible. But you can't do any of that if you don't have your health.
No, absolutely. And I hear over and over again from people, it's hereditary, I can't change, everyone in my family is overweight.
Mm-hmm.
And where it really is, you know, 20% is the genes and 80% is lifestyle. And the fact that they're all having the same issues, they're eating the same way, they're doing the same thing, they usually have the same physical habits. So it really, people can shift. They just have to think differently about it. We're going to take another short break. And when we come back, I really want to continue this conversation. I find it fascinating. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. And let's start the conversation.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Bonnie Royal, registered dietitian, and we've been talking about women and midlife health and really talking about some of the challenges that they have and some of the things that they can do to change their health and really take control of it. And I want to continue the conversation. Bonnie, I'd like to ask you to talk just a little bit about some of the biggest challenges that women in midlife face when they're trying to get healthy and lose weight.
Well, Janelle, as from our previous discussion, we know the role hormones play in losing weight. But for many women, their hormones are fine, and they're still having trouble losing weight. It's the one challenge we all face is that weight gain is primarily due to the effects of aging because of our decreased activity. And the biggest effect, too, is a loss of lean body mass. That lean body mass is what burns a lot more calories than fat tissue. So the loss of lean mass actually starts in our 40s, because as women, we start losing about 1% of our lean body mass per year. And that can be somewhat tempered if you have a consistent exercise program that includes weight resistance training. We also have found out, just in the last couple of years, that research shows that as much as 25 to 30 grams of protein is needed at each meal to optimally stimulate what we call the muscle protein synthesis. That is to be the build up of that muscle. Now, when we know from studies, we can see that the average woman has 10 grams of protein at breakfast. So right there, right off the gate, she's 20 grams short. Now, another concern I have for women is because I've been a what you call a bone builder through the cooperative extension in Arizona, is bone health. Women can lose as much as 20% of their bone density, and that's the amount of bone we have, 5 to 7 years after menopause. So for us, the best case scenario is for women to enter menopause with sufficient bone density to minimize these subsequent losses. Another area that has received a lot of media attention the last few years is vitamin D levels. And I would say that almost all of my clients have their vitamin D levels tested, and most of them are actually outside the acceptable target range, and they have to take a supplement. Final area that has impact in weight and also on cancer risk is alcohol. I like to say that alcohol is not the fifth food group. And that's because we've got really at this point, and I always get that, that response when I talk about this, but at this point we do know, we have the best evidence shows that 3 or more servings of alcohol per week may increase the risk of breast cancer quite seriously. It's only 3 per week. So really, you know, at this stage, we know that alcohol has been statistically linked to a higher risk of breast cancer. So, I mean, even, for example, even those who have 2 to 5 drinks a day, they, which is quite a bit, but they increase their risk by 1.5 times those who don't. So even just having 1 drink a day can raise the risk by 4% in relationship to quantity and frequency. And surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly to me, is that alcohol actually increases our circulating levels of estrogen. See, so we're back to the hormone, and this is why we have this. Also, then this is why we're going to see the increase in the breast cancer. And it's also, alcohol is very taxing on our liver to process it. Alcohol is broken down into a compound, big name you don't need to know, acetaldehyde, which actually is very similar in composition to formaldehyde, which I think most people have probably heard if they've ever watched CSI on TV. It's a toxin. It's you know, it's poison. And so our body has to deal with that plus all the other toxins that we take in on a daily basis. So it just adds to the load. So because of that, when I work with women, I always zero in on alcohol consumption. Because I have found that one of the other things that seems to happen in midlife is that one of the ways women do deal with the stress of midlife is to come home at the end of the day and have a drink or two. Mm-hmm. And if we looked at weight gain, it certainly contributes calories. And people are aware that the calories from alcohol, your body treats it as fat because it doesn't know what to do with that because it's not a food. It is a toxin. The body says, what is this? And it says, well, we'll distort in fat tissues. And so it's going to accumulate as fat. And it'll actually even use, it'll accumulate that alcohol as fat tissue before even carbohydrate. So that's why often all I'll have to do with a client is we reduce their alcohol consumption and we'll start to see pounds melt away.
But we always hear that red wine has some health benefits. So how does that play into it?
It's a great question, Janelle. And yes, if we did have to, you know, obviously I'm not saying never drink. That's not what I'm advocating. But yeah, we would definitely say if you were going to have a choice, we would say choose red wine over other alcoholic beverages because it does contain the helpful antioxidants known as polyphenols, which protect our cells from the oxidative stress. And when we say oxidative stress, what does that mean? It's rusting out. That's really what it is. It's like if you ever took Coca-Cola and you poured on your hubcaps of your car, it'll all bubble. And it'll take the rust off. Well, that's what really this is what the polyphenols are doing. They're taking away that rust around our cells. So that can help compensate actually for the alcohol in the red wine because it's helping to reduce the what we call a free radical damage. So yes, that would probably be the best choice. But again, for women, there is a recommendation. There's a guideline that they have actually government guidelines that women keep to no more than 1 serving of alcohol a day, and 1 serving is 6 ounces of red or white wine, 1 ounce of spirits, or 12 ounces of beer. Mm-hmm. In all honesty, 6 ounces of wine is not a lot. Most people often, when I see some of my clients in person, I do have my different food models, and I'll actually ask them, pour, you know, water into this glass and let me know how much would you actually have of wine. And generally, most people are having closer to 9 to 12 ounces of wine at a sitting. Part of it is our goblets are very large. And so we will always pour, we will always serve ourselves according to the size of our plates. That's what we. That's just where our brain works.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. Because I see, you know, if you give someone a small plate, they'll take less, and if they have a full plate, they feel like they have to fill it. That's really interesting about alcohol and how much people are drinking. And I know when I have my wine, I mix it with club soda, so it's really not, because I don't drink it. I don't drink it straight. I like having a little bit, but mine's so watered down at this point. People laugh at me when I do it, but it's the way I like to. You know, it works. It works for me. And what I find is that's what's important at this stage in life.
That's right. That's a really important thing, that you have to find what works for you. That's why I always tell people, I don't talk about giving diet sheets that are blank. I really have to talk to somebody, really understand what their lifestyle is, because if it's not going to work with what you believe, what your lifestyles are, what your economic needs are, your family needs are, it might be the best recommendations, but it's going to go out the window.
No, absolutely. You know, we hear a lot about superfoods and the fad diets that are available today, and it seems so many of those are focused on younger women. What kind of foods or diets do you suggest for women in midlife to help them lose weight and get healthy?
Well, I think one topic we haven't really mentioned is that in midlife we start to see the risk of cardiovascular disease rear its head. So that's a risk that we have to address. We certainly have that risk of diabetes and, of course, weight gain. So I guide women to choose a diet that is what we call rich in nutrients but lower in caloric density. For example, I would suggest that if she's going to have a salad and she says, gee, I usually have it with raisins in there, I would say use fresh grapes instead. Why? Well, you can have 15 red grapes, the same amount of calories that you can get in a tablespoon of raisins. So you're getting a lot more. You're also going to contribute to your fullness. You're getting a lot of water, actually, in that fruit. People don't realize fruit contributes to our water intake. And so you're getting definitely a little more fiber from the skin. It takes longer to eat. And it's not such a concentrated source of sugar, because most people are not going to use just a tablespoon of raisins when they make a salad, or if they go buy one from a store. They're going to use a lot more. I like to call some of these salads actually salad Sundays, because they're so sweet. I can't take it. But I'm also looking at choosing healthful fats. And, I mean, this topic of fats now has exploded in the last, couple years regarding coconut oil and all the different oils we have. So we do know some things. We've got a little bit of a handle in knowing that now we know all saturated fats are not as bad as we thought they were. So some of them can be incorporated in the diet, but we have to look at the type, how much, et cetera, in relation to the whole diet. I certainly would advocate lean sources of protein. Definitely low-fat dairy. It doesn't always have to be, fat-free if someone doesn't like the way it tastes, but definitely would stick with low-fat or even dairy alternatives. We have such a plethora of products out there, everything from hemp milk, to your basic soy milk, chia seed milk, it's all out there now. The basis, of course, is plenty of vegetables, especially the green leafy type. And I do suggest women in midlife start to go lighter on their fruit. I try to really steer them towards 2 servings per day. I also guide my clients to select carbs that are what we like to call slow burning. By that I mean they don't break down quickly in our bodies and consequently raise our blood sugar levels. Biggest thing that somehow we've kind of missed the boat in the media about the next topic that I bring up, and that is increasing fiber. And fiber is one way for women to help their body metabolize excess estrogen. A lot of people don't realize that it actually pulls the excess estrogen out of the body. And this can be, actually having excess estrogen is very common for women who are obese, because the estrogen literally gets stuck in the fat cells. So when we add that high-fiber diet, it's also going to help you feel fuller longer, so you won't be looking for snacks between meals. And when I'm talking about fiber, I'm talking about fiber obtained directly from veggies, fruits, and 100% whole wheat products like the bran or steel-cut oatmeals. I'm not talking about functional fibers like the ones found in Fiber One bars or yogurts or what we're seeing the food companies do now. The fiber they're adding to these products is not the same type of fiber that you find in your fruits and your veggies and your whole grain products. So if a woman's also having elevated blood sugar levels, I'll suggest she stick to 3 meals per day and just one snack, because it's that constant grazing of food that also elevates that blood sugar. And then for bone health, I always look to see how much calcium they take in from their diet. We always, of course, try to go food first. So I try to find foods that they could incorporate into their diet, add to their diet, but sometimes it's just not going to work. So we do have to use a supplement. And sometimes we don't have to use a supplement every day. I've actually had people where we've set up their diet where, okay, maybe 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you take a supplement. The rest, we've been able to fit in enough calcium that you can work that. And the last thing that I never had to think about probably 10 years ago is now adding foods that contain prebiotics and probiotics to take, because of the fact that we do have this digestive health issue that seems to be raising its ugly head as we age.
So I want to continue that conversation. We're going to take our final break, but I want to come back and talk to that after the break, if that's okay with you. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Bonnie Royal, registered dietitian. We've been talking about women's health in midlife and having a great conversation, so if you missed any of it, you want to make sure you go back and listen. And just before the break, you were talking about, you're going to talk about probiotics and just expand on that a little bit. That was the final piece of what you were sharing. So do you want to continue with that, Bonnie, please?
Sure. A lot of people, the word probiotics is very familiar to them, but they have never heard the word prebiotics. And I think the easiest way for me to really describe a prebiotic is that it's the food that actually feeds the probiotics so they can survive. So you first have to have a prebiotic before you're going to have a probiotic. And we actually have foods that have natural prebiotics in them. And some of these examples are things that we have on our shelf probably, like bananas, onions, garlic, asparagus, leeks, artichokes, soybeans, whole wheat foods, cabbage, and any kind of fermented foods, especially fermented foods, are going to be a prebiotic. And then we have some prebiotics that are actually being added to food. You may read the label of a yogurt and see the word inulin. Inulin is a prebiotic. Now, there is a caveat with inulin. Some people have a real problem when they'll take food with inulin. They'll find they get a lot of bloating, discomfort, and if that occurs, then that's not a food for you. That's one of those times you need to listen to your body and know this isn't right for me. Probiotics, I think that, as you know, it's a huge market, probably billion-dollar market at this range. The thing of it is that it's a wild west out there. There really is nobody regulating. The FDA does not regulate probiotics. So whatever's said in the label, the manufacturer can say what they want within a certain range. Obviously, they will be called in if they're trying to make specific health or disease claims. But the problem is a lot of these companies, you know, we want to make sure they're following good manufacturing practices, what we call. So that by that I mean we want to make sure when you buy a probiotic that it actually has what it says it has in it. Sometimes they'll take 10 off a shelf and they'll do a lab test and they'll find out that maybe only one or two has the amount of probiotics they say they do. So how can you find this out? One way is to look for the USP. It says USP on the label, which means that they've got an independent credentialing agency comes in to their factory to make sure that they're following those practices. Another way is actually just to consult with a registered dietitian, because the big thing is probiotics are all over the place regarding what part of the body they're going to affect or what type of bacteria they have and whether you need them or not. By that I mean you have probiotics that are really geared for someone who might be having upper respiratory problems. you have probiotics that are geared towards someone that's having Crohn's disease or what we call inflammatory bowel disease. You have someone that maybe needs a different type of bacteria because they have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or and IBS. So that's why you may not find relief with the product you pull off the shelf because it doesn't have the type of bacteria that's specific to what you need given your current condition.
So it's what I'm hearing you say is it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. It's you need the probiotic that fits what your actual issue is to make sure you're getting the right thing.
Totally said perfectly, Janelle, because really what you're doing is wasting a lot of money because many of these products can be $40, $50, $60 a bottle. And if you're not purchasing the right one, you're not going to get the relief you're looking for.
That's interesting. If people don't take anything else away from this, that's a great takeaway to really make sure you're getting the right things in the vitamins and all the supplements that you're getting. I want to shift as we wrap up our conversation together and just have you talk a little bit more. You mentioned this earlier that hormones are one of the challenges for midlife for women and their challenges with weight. Can you expand a little bit on how the role of hormones plays in weight management?
Sure. I think when women hear hormones, most of us think of the two we think of always, estrogen and progesterone. But when someone like me, hormone cure coach, hears it and thinks of hormones, especially with weight loss resistance, we start thinking of what we call the Charlie's Angels of Hormones. That's that hit TV show and movies where you have these three women who use their brains and their body to take down any man. So when you watch them work together, it was a poetic dance. And it literally should be the same thing for your hormones. Your hormones should work together. They should be a powerful team, graceful and effective. Yet, if we continue with this analogy, sometimes it doesn't always happen, and I'll explain how it really can affect your weight. So if we started with the first angel, Sabrina, she was the smart one, the no-nonsense, strategic thinking one. So she was the one that often had to rescue the angels in danger. Well, we have a hormone called cortisol, and that's what cortisol's job is. It rescues us. We are in danger, or it thinks we're in danger. So cortisol courses through your bloodstream and alerts your nervous system to threats. So whether it's an imminent car accident or you see a toddler heading towards a wall socket. Now, cortisol helps you respond to the scary effects of everyday adventures by regulating other hormones too, such as your thyroid hormone and estrogen. However, your body doesn't know the difference in everyday stresses. You see, it can't distinguish that imminent car accident to your boss coming in and saying to you, I need this 20-page report by the end of the day. Whenever we feel stress, cortisol is released. So walking around with an elevated cortisol level has major health implications, such as diabetes and prediabetes. See, cortisol's main job is to raise your blood sugar level. It does that because it wants to give us energy to run away from whatever the attack is that's coming to us. So even a small increase in cortisol, And this would be probably surprising to many of your listeners, even something as drinking caffeine can raise blood sugar and then increase insulin, so that cortisol mechanism. So elevated cortisol is linked to obesity and an increase in body fat, and especially that belly fat. And the reason behind this is that your belly has four times more cortisol receptors than fat located anywhere else in your body. So the other health concerns with a high cortisol are depression. Half the people with diagnosed with depression have high cortisol levels, suicide, delayed wound healing, risk of infertility, and then what we call polycystic ovarian syndrome, which many we're seeing an incredible increase in this syndrome in this country. Worsening sleep, we know insomniacs have a higher 24-hour cortisol level, and bone loss in menopausal women. So that's the first one, cortisol, that really can have its biggest impact on weight. Then we have our second angel, Jill. She was the sporty angel. She's the one that, it's like your thyroid hormone, and the thyroid hormone is called thyroxine, and that's what keeps you energetic, slender, and happy. Without enough thyroid, you feel fatigued, you gain weight easily, and you go through life in kind of a low mood. Now, your thyroid is your metabolic thermostat. It regulates how quickly you burn calories and explains why your thyroid, when it's out of whack, weight control becomes such a problem. Our last angel is Kelly, and she's estrogen. She's the sensitive angel. She's soft and voluptuous. She's also streetwise and tough. And this is what estrogen does for us. It keeps you flush as a woman with those feel-good neurotransmitters, serotonin. It also keeps our joints lubricated. That's why very often women, when they start to enter menopause and if their estrogen levels are very low, they'll start to have body aches. It also affects your sleep, makes your appetite feel right, and it makes your face relatively wrinkle-free to have enough estrogen floating around. So and estrogen kind of also corrals the other angels to keep them in balance. But the biggest thing is when you have a low estrogen level, it stimulates your appetite. The research has found that estradiol, which is one of the major estrogen in our body, uses the same pathway in our body as leptin. And leptin is another hormone. It's released by fat. And when this is released, it activates what I call your hunger button. It gets pushed. So you want to eat more, and since your body is not functioning optimally, the extra calories go to the places like the midsection.
Wow, I love the explanation you just gave for that. And I remember Charlie's Angels on TV, so I've got a really good visual in my head. And you know, we're going to have to, I think, come back and have you back and have another conversation more on hormones and all the things it does, because I love the way that you're able to really boil it down in a way that people can understand what it is, because these are really, they're complicated topics, and most people want to keep them complicated so people can't figure out what to do. But I believe that by having these conversations and getting people to understand them, it makes such a difference. So you've shared so much with us today, but we really only scratched the surface. How can people get more information about you and what you have to offer?
Well, they could start by visiting my website, and that is b3nutrition.com, and that's B as in boy, the number 3, and the word nutrition. And there you can sign up for my free ebook along with my e-zine, Two Bites Full. And you can request to schedule a complimentary Discover the Secrets to a Smarter Way to Slim Down telephone session.
Thank you. And what we'll do is we'll make sure that we add a link to connect with you also at our eatgreatlivewellradio.com webpage. So we'll have a link there for you too.
Thank you.
I also like to ask all of our guests to share just one action item that our listeners can implement in the next week to start getting healthy and create a healthy future for themselves and those they love.
What I'm seeing a lot now is recently is probably what's coming up to my dashboard, so to speak, and that is one of the pillars of healthy weight loss talks about mindfulness. And there's a lot of talk about mindfulness now, and I think there's some of it people think it's just sitting in a corner, you know, being quiet or meditating, but it's more than that. And mindfulness can have to do with your meal time. So I would suggest to your listeners that later today or tomorrow to sit down at a table when you eat, with as little distractions as possible. So that means no TV, radio, cell phone, e-readers, magazines, etc. This will help break the notion that food is just another activity to cross off your to-do list and give you time to reconnect with why we eat. I like to explain to people we eat to nourish our bodies and to provide our bodies with premium fuel so that we can use that fuel to do the things we love. So even if you can do this exercise just for one meal per day, you'll start to create an awareness of when you begin to feel full, along with really tasting your food. And this most likely will be a new experience and translate to a beginning of healthier food choices and portions for many people, because the research does show that mindfulness can help with weight loss.
I love that tip. So I'm going to challenge all of our listeners to eat at least one meal in the next couple of days mindfully, and we'd love to have you share your experience. If you go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com and click on the link to Facebook and share your experience on what it's like. And I love what you said, that it's not just another activity. It's really got a purpose. I want to thank you for your time today, Bonnie. We've had a great conversation, and I'd love to have you back to continue the conversation in the future. But thank you for sharing so much.
Thank you, Janelle.
Until next week, remember that even small changes can make a positive difference in your health and your life. We talked about a lot of great things today. So take time to really be mindful. Think about what you're eating. Remember those Charlie's Angels of hormones and how they affect what you do and your health. And be sure to join us each week so that we can continue to build a healthy relationship together. Join us at eatgreatlivewellradio.com. Connect with us on social media, and let's continue the conversation. Take care, have a great week, and bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. Each week at this time, we bring you straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Join us next Thursday and every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on the EWN Radio Network. To get a replay of this week's show, listen to past shows, or contact Janelle, go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com. Have a great week, and remember, you can choose to eat great and live well.